Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
It's Straight Outta Cobham, a show about Chelsea FC from The Athletic. Coming up, a late dagger to the heart by the Blades. Two steps forward, three steps back again, and a pigeon in the press room. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic. This is Straight Outta Cobham. One of those episodes, I'm afraid, today, gang. We seem to have one good week and then one bad week at the moment. Disappointing result for Chelsea on Sunday at Bramall Lane, which we're going to get stuck into soon enough, but not before I introduce my guest, two of The Athletic's very best with me here today. Good morning, Dominic Fifield.
Good morning, Matthew. I'm intrigued by the pigeon reference.
More on that to come. Luke Bosch is with us too. How are you doing, Luke?
Yeah, not too bad, Matt. Enjoying the sunny weather. It's about the only thing to be sunny about this morning.
Yeah, particularly when you went to the Bristol Street Motors Trophy Final to try and piggyback on some glory for Wickham, and that didn't even work out for you. It's been one of those seasons.
Yeah, not gutting at all. 90-plus winner for Peterborough. A cross that was in no way a shot that looped over the goalkeeper's head and stunned everyone at the other end of Wembley. At least it was easy to get home.
Yeah, turns out Fergie time is genetic. Let's get some premature adjudications, not on Peterborough versus Wickham, but on Sheffield United versus Chelsea. What you got for me, Luke?
I think that Chelsea are going to sign a central midfielder in the summer.
You have to get rid of one first. Dom, can you improve on that?
Oh, dear. I think that Sheffield United won't get another point this season, and Pochettino will leave Chelsea in the summer.
All right, bold, like it. Mine is there will be five or more changes to the starting lineup for the game against Everton on Monday next week. Take your pick. Let's get into it then. Sheffield United 2, Chelsea 2.
This is Sousa trying to make it his. McAtee, Arblaster in. Away by Fernandes. Up goes Hammer, who wants it? McBurney! Boy, did they need that!
Yeah, very disappointed, very frustrated, like the player are feeling. Yes, it was a so painful result on the end, even if we analyze and say it's a fair result. Yes, in the way that we concede the second goal, we feel very disappointed now.
A pigeon somehow found its way into the press room at Bramall Lane an hour or so before kickoff. It caused mayhem. Basically, everybody was like, oh, ha-ha, there's a pigeon. But then let's let it out the window. But the windows are those kind of safety ones that don't open that fast. It's actually really difficult to get the pigeon out of the window. That was the high point of the day. Sadly, not long after that, the damn whistle had to blow to start the match. Liam Toomey was there for The Athletic. Here are his thoughts.
Just when they thought they were out of mid-table mediocrity, Chelsea pulled themselves back in. Only Burnley, Crystal Palace and these opponents, Sheffield United, have conceded more goals from the 76th to the 90th minute than Chelsea this season. put them under pressure late on and they will crack. And that was the evidence at Bramall Lane again. Sheffield United had very little guile, very little cunning to their attacking play, but they had brute force. They put Chelsea's box under siege, really, in the final minutes. A succession of corners, free kicks that weren't cleared, and in the end, two headers that weren't challenged created a tap-in for Ollie McBurnie. And to be honest, they deserved it. Chelsea weren't good enough to win this game. Noni Madueke's goal to put them 2-1 up arrived against the run of play in the second half. Until then, it was quite a familiar pattern for Chelsea. They started quite well, undid Sheffield United's defensive game plan after a handful of minutes with one of the easiest goals I've seen all season from Thiago Silva, and then contrived to make a game of it. They dominated possession, but with this Chelsea team, the possession only ever offers an illusion of control. It's never actually control, because as soon as the other team decide to put themselves about a bit, up the intensity, Chelsea take steps back, they start making mistakes. Thiago Silva played a blind pass back into his own box, which almost yielded an equaliser for Brereton Diaz. The crowd gets up. Before you know it, Sheffield United were level. Who was striking Jadon Bogle? Conor Gallagher doesn't know. Marco Correa doesn't know. It always seems to happen to this team that players are allowed to run unchecked to score goals or create goals. And this Sheffield United team has scored fewer goals than any other team in the division and averaged fewer shots per game than any other team in the division this season. And yet they, like everyone else it seems now, managed to score twice against Chelsea. They always offer you moments, you know, to be optimistic. Cole Palmer, I think, had one of his quieter games, but still managed to get a nice assist. Chelsea did some good things, but there was no coherence. Nothing was joined up into a real performance that convinced you. And what could have been a 3-point gap to Manchester United with a game in hand is now 5 points. And that late McBurnie goal just feels like it hammers home that Chelsea are not capable of the consistency required to make a European charge out of this season spent in mid-table.
Not consistent enough to challenge for Europe. Dom, I think that's the message of the weekend, really, isn't it? Because this was such a missed opportunity, given that Manchester United dropped points. And you think not just to the game on Sunday, but also the game last weekend against Burnley, and dropping those points against those two teams, the bottom two sides in the league, might prove really costly come the end of May.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that sums up where Chelsea are, that the Manchester United, the giddy sort of reaction to the Manchester United win, were a sensational, dramatic game of football, chaotic, etc., sandwiched in between two of the worst results Chelsea have had in modern times. I mean, they haven't lost either of those two matches, but they conceded so many chances to the two worst teams in the division. They've been held by the two worst teams in the division. And I think that's really offered a truer reflection of where Chelsea are in this transition, development, progression, whatever you want to call it. Actually, probably putting the microscope very much on whether there is any kind of progression happening at the moment. An appalling result at Bramall Lane. And normally when you go to, for any team to go to an away game and come away with a draw in the Premier League, you'd think, well, that's not too bad. But Sheffield United have been so porous at home. They conceded so many goals at Bramall Lane. They're there for the taking. And twice Chelsea led yet again, having done the same against Burnley the previous week. It sort of defies belief, really, that we're back revisiting the same old issues. But I guess, I mean, I saw some of the comments that people responded on Twitter to the appeal for questions, etc. People expecting this to be, you know, well, it's all about patience with Pochettino, etc. It is. There will be mitigating circumstances that he will point to, but now for the first time he's actually come out and suggested that he needs better players in the summer as opposed to coaching more out of these players, and that feels a particularly risky strategy to me.
It feels like a mentality thing, doesn't it, Luke? Somebody said to me yesterday, well, lamented to me yesterday, Chelsea's ability to play down to the opponent they're playing against, that sort of meaning when they play against a team who aren't very good, they drop their level incredibly. You know, the performances we've seen against Manchester City this season versus the performances we've seen against Burnley and Sheffield United and Brentford in recent weeks. Is that something that you put on the players or the coach?
Not really sure. It's probably a little from column A and a little from column B. And it's funny because that's the exact same problem that my five-a-side team has. And it's one of the reasons why we haven't won the league this year. But it's and it's really tricky, you know, sort of drawing on personal experience, because it becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy in your mind when it happens enough times. You have the potential to overthink it when you're, you know, playing against a like a worse team, or you take a lead, you know, in a game that you're expected to hold on and maybe push on. You know, when Chelsea scored that second, they would have expected to go on probably and score a third, maybe even a fourth, and actually, you know, end up with a comfortable win. And that hasn't happened. You know, as you say, it didn't happen against Brentford, didn't happen against Burnley, didn't happen against Sheffield United, you know, didn't happen against Leeds, barely happened against Leicester. You know, the longer it keeps happening, I think the more it will play on players' minds. And that's when, you know, it does come into a bit of a squad mentality thing, and a, you know, a bit of the players, you know, freeze. And I think you could see it in a couple of the moments after the goal. And, you know, there was some tiredness, there was some confusion, apprehension. I think a lot of people were pointing to how many, you know, late headers Ollie McBurnie won, and it's difficult to look at. But, you know, the other side to that is, as we've said, you know, many, many times, and people keep saying, is that this is what happens with young and inexperienced players. They are less equipped to cope with difficult situations, because that sort of thing comes with experience in games under the belt and learning from more experienced players in the squad. And unfortunately for Chelsea, those more experienced players in the squad are too few and far between this season. And even Thiago Silva being back in the team couldn't deliver some sort of defensive solidity for Chelsea that Mauricio Pochettino might have liked to have seen on Sunday.
I agree with Luke completely on that. And I actually think the sort of matching up to the opposition, the standards of the opposition, probably applies to the Manchester United game as well. It was chaotic because Manchester United are a chaotic football team who play chaotic football, and Chelsea sort of tapped into that and did the same on the night. It's a worrying trait. I mean, to concede, was it 7 games in a row now? It's at least 2 goals being conceded. And when you look at the standard of the opposition they're playing against, it's very troubling. I mean, if there has been progress made this season, it's probably been in forward areas, but there's been regression in terms of defensive solidity. And I mean, they genuinely don't look as if they can combine being an attacking force and having some kind of surety at the back. It's a mess.
Dom mentioned the tweets. At SO Cobham Pod is the place to go to get in touch with us. Let's run through a few. Neil says, unfortunately, the progress which has been made by the team has been an attacking play and probably mainly down to Cole Palmer's influence. This has also been at the behest of the defensive player. And I don't just mean the back four, the whole team defends poorly. Malachi wanted to know, does the excuse of being a young and inexperienced team run out against one of the worst PL teams ever seen? Yes, probably. Shep called it a mid-table performance from a mid-table team. Elliot says, at this point, sack Poch and have John Terry as caretaker for the rest of the season, because that worked out brilliantly for Chelsea last term, sticking a legend in for the last few games. Callum, we were creating so little against one of the worst defensive teams in the league, and yet we waited so long to make attacking changes. Gallagher has a lot to offer, but he should not be playing on the wing for that long against the back five. That one's on the manager. So Pochettino coming in for a lot of stick, Dom. You pointed out in our group chat after Thursday's game that he needed praise for the substitutions that he made in that game, which was absolutely correct. But he got them wrong here, didn't they? A, for waiting a little bit too long, and B, I know this is not his fault, but he brings on Cassaday and Badiashile to defend high balls into the box, and the first thing they do is both miss their headers, which then allows McBurnie to equalise.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was just horrific defending, and well, it wasn't even defending, it was just an attempt at defending, I guess. I mean, there's a logic to, if you think they're going to be balls pumped into the box, then you bring on a centre half in Badiashile to try and propel them. But if he doesn't do his job, he doesn't do his job. That's a state. I mean, I can see the logic of some of the other ones to a certain extent. Chukwuemeka coming on for Palmer. We have to remember that Chelsea did play 110 minutes on Thursday night.
And Palmer got a horrible, horrible tackle from Jack Robinson a few minutes before.
That was absolutely dreadful, absolutely, and that could easily have been sending off, it being slightly higher up, contacts are made slightly higher up the leg. So I can see the logic of that one. Madueke coming off, he was playing, he was probably Chelsea's best attacking performer at Bramall Lane. He looked as if he might offer them some kind of threat running in behind. I guess if you bring your Mikhailo Mudryk, you're thinking that you could probably, you'll retain that, but then Mudryk misses a header as well at the end there, and he's being asked to defend in areas that he's clearly not capable of doing at the moment. Weirdly, the whole Gallagher on the left wing thing, that's obviously been done to accommodate Madueke in the team, which Madueke coming in has effectively cost Palmer his best position in the Chelsea team coming off the right, and forced Gallagher into a position where he's not particularly comfortable either. Yes, he'll offer his energy there, but he's not the same player when he's playing out wide. I just wonder whether Jackson could have filled in there if need be and play Gallagher as a 10 and Palmer as a false nine. I know it's not ideal, but he drifts wherever he plays anyway, if he's in those central areas. But the gambles didn't work. The gambles didn't pay off. There's a bit of a legacy from midweek, the Thursday night game. He wanted to freshen things up in some way. He probably looked at the fact that it's Sheffield United with a goal difference of minus 52 and bottom of the league and going back down to the Championship and thought, well, if I am going to chop and change it to a certain extent, four or five players, then this is the game to do it. But the way things are going for Pochettino at the moment at Chelsea, the big decisions are just not happening for him. And it's sort of this sort of bought into that trend.
Yeah, he said afterwards, it's about to compete, it's about to compete, it's about to compete. For different reasons, we struggle to compete in these type of games. We were talking at halftime, the way we approached the game was fantastic. We cannot talk about rubbish things. Nate says, this loss is on Poch for a number of reasons, but I'm so tired of him playing players out of position. Gallagher at left wing is such a bad call, and Palmer clearly less effective in the middle. Then he goes and changes the defensive structure with minutes left in the game. James says, it's clear Poch isn't the answer. I don't understand how he does not make adjustments and just substitutions. Chris Wilder made clear changes that broke down Poch's tactics. He's clearly feeling the heat a little bit, Luke, if he's trying to turn it onto his players rather than onto himself. But a few people pointing out that if Chelsea were to dispense with his services for next season, there's a paucity of candidates to come in and replace him. Might that be the thing that sees him stay for another season, or are you at the point now where you're thinking, unless he wins the FA Cup and can somehow finish sixth or seventh there needs to be a change regardless?
I think it's a really tricky one to try and predict, the mindset of the new or newish owners. They've been around for enough time now, I think, as to whether they will stick with Pochettino or change it during the summer. And it's, you know, to borrow one of Liam's favourite phrases, you know, getting rid of a manager is only half the task, isn't it? As you say, Matt, and you look at the options that are out there and the fact that, you know, Liverpool are looking for a new head coach and Barcelona are as well. And, you know, there's a lot of talk that Manchester United might be, you know, you're looking at, you know, Chelsea in their current state compared with those clubs, you know, Chelsea are arguably the fourth most attractive proposition for a top manager. And that's not really it's not a position that as a club you want to be in, where, you know, you're essentially scraping the barrel of available managerial candidates. But I do get the frustrations from fans with regards to Pochettino's team selection. I thought Gallagher playing left wing, as Dom kind of said there, it really didn't work. But I had some sympathy with him with regards to the Sheffield United game, because I think if Malo Gusto's not available, that means you have to play Axel Disasi or Trevor Chalobah, i.e. a centre-back at right-back. And even if you did play, if you played Palmer right-wing, which I agree is his best position, but he does drift in from that position, which means you've then got no attacking presence down the right-hand side. And so I can see why, you know, Madueke playing there, or maybe Raheem Sterling, you know, Madueke's a left-footer, but he does like to hug the touchline and either drive down the line at players or cut inside from a wide position, whereas I think Palmer almost cuts inside or drifts inside, sorry, to receive the ball. I can see why Pochettino did that. And then, you know, you try and balance that on the other side with Cucurella being asked to play higher up. But I don't think that's, you know, where he's at his most effective. He had almost zero attacking presence throughout the game. So I think Pochettino was restricted by injuries to his squad, as he has been all season. But I agree, the changes didn't seem to make loads of sense. And you know, the team selection, I think, left a little bit to be desired. But again, and that's why I think, you know, I talk about signing a central midfielder. I thought, you know, Enzo, there's been a lot talk about Enzo Fernandez in the last 24 hours since the game. You know, he didn't look great, but he's being asked to play 90 minutes over and over and over again. And I think you're going to play badly if that happens. You know, it's just not sustainable for him to play the number of minutes that he's been playing.
Yeah, and it's not as if he had a vast pool of experience to draw upon before he came to Chelsea either. Dom, players are often very, very highly rated when they're out injured and the team that they play for is performing poorly. But do you think that Chelsea would be, A, would have won Sunday's game, and B, be any further up the table if they had a defence that regularly consisted of people like James and Chilwell and Colwill and Fofana? Or is that just an easy excuse to make because they haven't been there?
Well, it would suggest it might help if they were available. I mean, we don't know. I mean, Fofana, for example, has barely played for Chelsea. He's pretty much been injured throughout his stint at the club so far. So there is a certain amount of guesswork there. Weirdly, I know Thiago Silva scored the goal, and in some ways it was reassuring to see him on that pitch as an older head, but that was probably another reason to have De Zerzi playing at right back. Just, it was effectively a back three to help him out in the way that we know Thomas Tuchel used to help Thiago Silva out when he played in his back line at this stage of his career. Having a few more options, yeah, definitely. I think it's actually almost, we can pinpoint that back line. We can even pinpoint the goalkeeper, because he's started to make a few mistakes now as well, which is worrying and a reminder of where he is in his career in terms of development, experience, etc. But the central midfield partnership, Caicedo, Fernandes, yes, I agree with Luke that Fernandes looks knackered. He looks, and that's really contributing to his occasionally very slack performances, of which one was at Bramall Lane. Caicedo looks a bit lost still at times in games. I think he did in midweek. I think he even against Sheffield United, he doesn't look the player that Chelsea thought they were buying from Brighton. And that's probably because of where he is in his career, but also he looked brilliant in the Brighton team because it was almost built around him. It was built to make him look so good, and Chelsea just haven't found a way of coaxing that quality out of him yet on a consistent basis, in the same way they haven't with so many of their younger talents, Palmer aside. Actually, the absence of an alternative in the defensive midfield is probably as costly to Chelsea defensively as that back line and the injury absentees there. The fact that these two have to play, he obviously doesn't want Cassidy playing there, and Gallagher's looks awkward when he's played in those two positions. It sort of contributed to it all, and it all feels a bit like, I don't know, round pegs in square holes or vice versa. You can actually put a round peg in a square hole, can't you? You can't put a square in a round, or you can if it's small enough.
You can put a round in a square hole, but it's not going to anchor gonna touch in properly, that.
No,
is it?
No, no. Which sums up Chelsea, doesn't it? Nothing really anchors in properly.
Yeah, I completely agree with Dom about the injuries to Leslie Ugochukwu and Romeo Lavia really restricting Poch's options at defensive midfield, and that having a knock-on effect on the back line and its efficacy throughout this season. And to be honest, I actually thought Caicedo played all right against Sheffield United. I thought he had some decent touches. Yeah, he had a couple of those where he dives into a tackle and misses it and slightly exposes people behind him, particularly one quite late on in the game. But it was far improved from the Manchester United performance, you know, which was pretty bad. But just going back to that back line and that question you asked, Matt, I think obviously it would be great to have, you know, Chelsea's first choice back line available. But, you know, a more important thing is just having a consistent group available, whether that, you know, those are your first choice or second choice players, just so whatever back four, back five you are putting out has the chance to, you know, get some chemistry and work together and understand how each other plays. And this was another game where it's another change back four and De Zerzi playing out of position. And again, it's not surprising that it looks disjointed, because you can't really predict what Chelsea's back line is going to be week in, week out. You might be able to get two of the players right, which is like a staggering situation to be in. You know, from a coaching point of view, I don't envy, you know, Mauricio Pochettino's dilemmas in that regard. And from a player point of view, and from Petrovic's point of view in goal, when you don't know who's going to be in front of you, you know, you're a bit more cautious. You know, you could see that he was potentially a bit hesitant on the McBurnie goal, if you're being really, really picky. And obviously, you know, gets massively exposed by Bogle. But, you know, those kind of things have massive knock-on effects further up the pitch as well, because defense, you know, you start the ball with defense and that impacts how you progress it up the pitch. And it's not surprising that Chelsea look, you know, hapless in attack, particularly in the second half.
Massively exposed by Bogle. Who would have thought it? I mean, it's a staggering, isn't it, when you think about it? Luke's right. That back four that started at Bramall Lane, I don't think any of them, certainly in the positions that they started in, none of them's first choice. You wouldn't look at them and say that's any of them are really at this stage in their careers. With Thiago Silva wouldn't be playing there. You wouldn't have De Zerbi at right back. Chalobah, no. I mean, he's a sort of backup player now, and Cucurella has had his travail since he came to Chelsea, and you know, you'd probably have Ben Chilwell still ahead of him if fit and available. So sums it up really. There's very makeshift.
Yeah, you probably have Ian Mattson ahead of both of them as well. So we just need a new goalie, a new centre half, a new central midfielder, recall the left back who's on loan, try and get the right back and club captain fit. Don't sell the captain who's about to leave, and maybe get some backup for Nicholas Jackson, who can't score at the moment. Anyway, on the positive side of the ledger, Chelsea are unbeaten in 7 games. They've only lost one of the last 11 in all competitions. They actually moved up the table this weekend to ninth. They're 4 points behind West Ham with 2 games in hand on them. This is me reaching a little bit, Luke, but given what we were saying about Chelsea not playing well against rubbish teams, I mean, they've got Everton at the Bridge on Monday. That's going to be a scrap. After that, it's the FA Cup semi-final. But they then go to Arsenal and to Villa Park this month in the league before hosting Spurs and West Ham. So maybe it's good that they're playing teams who are higher up the table, he says, clutching at that straw on the floor.
I mean, to be honest, I'll clutch at those straws with you, Matt. I kind of agree. I do think I have slightly more optimism about Chelsea playing better sides than I do about, you know, the lesser teams. I completely expect Everton to get 3 points next Monday. I'm really sorry to whoever, Lee, you know, whether it's Liam or Si going, but I just, it's going to be another one of those match reports that Dom picks up at, you know, 6 a.m. on Tuesday morning, I think, unfortunately. But yeah, I think, you know, Chelsea played one of their best performances of the season was against Arsenal, and obviously it only ended up in a draw rather than a win. But they played very well. The Tottenham game, you know, again, that's one of those that you can't read too much into because it was just incredibly chaotic. And yeah, West Ham and Villa to come, you know, two sides that are still in Europe, good sides, but, you know, they'll potentially, depending on whether they get through their respective quarterfinals, you know, be, you know, fighting on multiple fronts. So that will play into Chelsea's hands, you'd think. So yeah, there's certainly, you know, slightly things to be optimistic about, but the fact that they've, you know, in those 7 games unbeaten, Chelsea have, as we've said, conceded 2 goals in each of them and had 3-2-2 draws against clubs in the bottom five of the Premier League, as well as conceding twice against two Championship sides. Yeah, it's interesting.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card. This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Let's leave aside for a moment, Dom, the two sporting directors, the rotating cast of chairmen, the chief executive, the fan advisory board, etc. and so on. If Chelsea can somehow win the FA Cup, if they can take points off Arsenal and damage their title bid and beat Spurs at home, would that be enough to convince the large section of Chelsea supporters who just don't want a former Spurs manager in charge of the club that Maurizio Pochettino is the man to lead them into next season? Or is this just something that's only going to end one way because of how the season's gone so far and because of where he's come from?
I'm sort of edging towards the second version. I think this last few days has almost illustrated that. Burnley, dreadful. Dreadful 10 men, awful. I mean, God, can't beat them, fine. Completely fractured relationship between head coach and fan base. Thursday night could well have exacerbated that. Let's not get it wrong. I mean, after 99 minutes, it looks as if they were going to get beaten at home by Manchester United, and that would have just, I mean, it would have ramped up the tension even more. Then they turn it around in those ridiculous 82 seconds. And we get this remarkable situation where Pochettino's in the post-match press conference talking about building bridges. I don't know whether he said rebuilding, because I don't think they've ever been established, but building bridges with the fan base and this team. And he actually said turning point in terms of that relationship. And all it's taken to shatter all that again has been, well, reverting to the mean, going back to the way they performed against Burnley effectively, and all the frailties and vulnerabilities and being exposed again by a team that's going to go back down to the Championship. I don't think there's any recovery from that, really. I think Chelsea will have some really good moments over what remains of the season. You know, they may well beat Tottenham at home. They could get a good result at the Emirates. It wouldn't surprise me at the slightest for all the reasons that we've discussed. But they're equally likely to become the first team to lose, you know, to Everton playing away from home since, I think, mid-December when they won at Burnley. They could easily not reproduce the excellent performance they managed in the FA Cup at Villa Park and get beaten by Aston Villa. I mean, it could happen. They could lose to anyone, or they could... Moreover, it's not even as much about losing anymore. They could get themselves into a position where they look in complete control of a game, get two goals ahead, and still not win a match. And all those old wounds will be reopened again. All the issues between the fan base and the head coach will just be exposed once again, and it'll be poison. It'll be toxic. And we've been doing this long enough to know that those relationships don't really get repaired. You only ever put a Band-Aid on them with a really good performance. That was very American, wasn't it? A plaster on them. And it's that gets ripped off. But with the next slip up they have, the margin for error is minimal now. It's tiny. So that's hence the premature adjudication at the beginning. I just think that we're probably at a position where he's never going to rebuild this any kind of level of trust with the fan base. And it's then whether the owners are influenced by that or not. They may not be. They may be stubborn. They may stick with it and say, look, you got to give this time, which is the logical way to progress. Any other club, that would be a logical thing to do. If you're seeing any kind of shoots of progression, you stick with it, given the amount of overhaul and transition and change at Chelsea in the last few years. But I'm not sure we've seen enough evidence that they don't sometimes go with their hearts rather than their heads.
That's got to be the key then, has it, Luke? The ownership and their attitude. And I guess we don't know that much about it, but from what we've seen, they're maybe not quite as populist in their thinking as Roman Abramovich was. I mean, he was just bound by success, wasn't he? He knew that was how to keep supporters on side, and that was his main aim at any cost. Do we think that maybe that's not the sole focus for the current ownership group, and it's more about profit margins and keeping the stadium full and the shirts selling in the club shop? But those things have to go hand in hand, right? You're not going to have the success commercially without the success on the pitch, unless you're Manchester United and you have a noodle partner.
Yeah, I think you're completely right, Matt. It's all very well and good being, you know, a very successful, you know, sports brand who's, you know, able to sell merchandise worldwide, but it's that has to come, you know, with being actually good and not consistently missing out on European football, Champions League football, and being talked about as, you know, a title contender. It's, you know, it's a little bit different to American sports where, you know, the sort of brand recognition of someone like, I don't know, the Boston Red Sox or, you know, the Chicago Bulls, you know, that can be maintained even when, you know, the team itself is struggling because of the draft system and, you know, the closed leagues. Those are sort of cyclic, and you can kind of anticipate that the team will get better again. It might be in 5 years, might be in 10 years, but they will probably have another up. Whereas, you know, in football, it's not necessarily the case. Teams can be down for a long, long time, you know. Nottingham Forest, for example. Yeah, it's just the last one that came to mind. Sorry.
Wow.
So sorry. But, you know, Forest are now on the up, and you know, it's all looking rosy. But
remember that next time you do the quiz, eh?
Yeah.
Next time you write that, remember what he said?
Yeah.
I think you're completely right in that, like, you know, the owners are probably
too late to have that.
Building a brand. But that needs to go hand in hand with on-field success as well.
All right, well, I'll tell you what, listener, once you've finished here, let's agree not to think about the Chelsea men's first team for a few days and just give ourselves a little bit of headspace to relax and think about other things, because we've got until Monday of next week until the next game that we will preview on our Thursday show.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Elsewhere in Chelsea news, not too much to talk about, really. The under-18s played out a 4-3 thriller against West Ham, though. That result means that they go above the Hammers to the top of the PL South table. They also have three games in hand on them. They came from behind. Danielle McNeely, remember, you can read Simon's profile on him on the site still, scored, and then Chelsea got three goals in 3 minutes just before the hour, courtesy of a Tyreek George brace and Ato Ampa. West Ham pulled two goals back later on, but Chelsea held firm. Their next game is at West Brom on Saturday. The under-21s play tonight as we record. They go to Aston Villa in PL2, and then they got the Dom Derby against Palace on Friday night. No game for the women's team because of the international break. And that is where we are going to leave it for today, with me reminding you to head to theathletic.com/ChelseaPod to sign up. Now you can read Liam's match piece from the Sheffield United game and loads of other great content up there as well. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, now known as X, it is at SO Cobham Pod. And if you want to leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods, we'd appreciate it greatly. It helps other Chelsea fans find the show. My thanks then to producer Lucy, to Dom, to Luke, and to you for being with us. Back with you on Thursday. Bye for now.
The Athletic.